And good morning, good morning, good morning, dear listeners. And obviously, don't worry, you know, we didn't have late sessions anyway. But nonetheless, obviously thanking David for sort of like not blessing us. I almost used the word bless, but pioneering us into this Friday morning session. And obviously, you know, when we look at Friday sessions, for some reason, you Namibians love overpopulating Namibian roads, specifically in the urban areas or the urban center of Windhoek. For some reason, everybody is just out and about and trying to get where they're supposed to get to at 8 a.m. And there's just too much or too many of you out there when in the other days you guys were not there. I don't know what's going on. It's probably the long weekend. Are you guys looking forward to Africa Day? Not that I've ever seen many of you Namibians being Pan-Africanist in to the core or being, you know, in love with the continent of Africa. I'd actually like to know from many of you, just as a little bit of a teaser for our discussion, because our discussion technically starts off this morning with a little bit of a not a Pan-African perspective, but like a continental view of a certain particular economic developments. And this is obviously, if you've not seen the Village e-paper for this morning, spoiler alert, that's where we're starting. And the said spoiler alert, has to do obviously with the dominance discussion. Now, I'm going to position three principles to you in this particular continental, intra-continental trade. Not inter, intra. You know, it goes literally within the how many corners that Africa have. And that's a lot of corners. But those corners, I've just imagined them to be 54 of them. Now, we explored the zero tariff policy that comes through from China in yesterday's particular discussion. And said particular discussion obviously also then breaks down further what this also means for Namibia, and that what would be the particular, you know, next steps be for the Namibian economy to fully enjoy the freedoms of the Chinese economy or the Chinese market, and for the Chinese economy to freely enjoy the freedoms of the Namibian economy and markets. So it is a two-way street, and when it comes to trade. So on one thing, Donald Trump is correct. Trade is supposed to be a two-way street. And trade is supposed to be, at sort of like the main goal between countries in the modern day globalization perspective. But globalization is obviously now greatly fragmented, because now we have all these particular problematic zones and areas, obviously brought on by divergent, and I call them divergent narratives that have popped up since 2020, obviously, not just COVID, but from COVID it went to the Ukraine conflict. From the Ukraine conflict it then went into the various attacks being put on the BRICS coalition of countries, which is at its heart an economic coalition. It's not a military coalition, guys. This is not Game of Thrones. This is not medieval Europe. There's not even the ancient worlds where you had the Carthaginians, the Romans, the various Greek city states, the ancient Egyptians, the Sumerians, the, you know, all those other ancient civilizations who all commanded and worked on neighborly relations, but started from military treaties. All of their discussions started from military treaties. And in today, since 1945, the new kind of diplomatic order that is established. Okay, let me set, let's take out the word order, because the word order is a little bit triggering also to me, because I immediately identify that there must be a hierarchy in the global realm of international relations. Because the moment you say or use the word order, that means a country like Namibia must be subservient, must be sort of like a second-rate partner in a negotiation, even though you do see a materialistic representation in some cases in international relations, how various African countries, which includes Namibia, technically can be, second-rate partners, i.e. we always come through with more needs than possible solutions. It's just the reality, guys. We have to assess our negatives. It's the basics in SWOT analysis. Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. It's the basic things. You build up the strengths. You diminish the weaknesses. You take charge of the opportunities and you try to avoid or to, actively or proactively diminish the occurrence of the potential threats. Because a threat is a potential negative. An opportunity is a potential positive. A weakness is a current negative. And a strength is a current positive. Now, with that particular sort of like springboard of a discussion, I now formally welcome you guys to the Unpacking the Day. Good morning. I do hope you've had your coffee as well. I've had mine. Obviously also started the particular day, on a slightly better note. And obviously, looking forward to what, the further discussions we obviously have planned for you here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. And as is the rules of engagement, the norms of our rules of engagement, fellow Namibians, dear listeners, maybe I should sound a little bit like that famous speech by Julius Caesar, where he said, friends, Romans, countrymen. And you go like, friends, okay, I don't consider many of you fellow Namibians kind of friends, but yeah, friends, Namibians, countrymen. The key here is, if you cascade yesterday's discussion of the zero tariff policy brought forward, laid forward, that emanates from the FOCAC, the Forum of Africa, of China Africa Cooperation, which happened in 2024. If you emanate from that direction, and you thus also look at the AFCFTA's particular goal, and you look at the narrative emanating from the US, I don't want to call it, but I'll call them squirming. I'll use the term squirming. I'll use the term kicking and shouting and screaming. I use the terms, living in denial without actually providing actual beneficial solutions. And that's even taking into consideration if any of you have ever seen on social media the US ambassador here in Namibia, where he's got like an active social media presence formal title as ambassador to Namibia, and he's visiting all American sites, American company sites in the oil exploration sector of Namibia. And he's actively highlighting, that the United States can be this much bigger partner in Namibia's oil exploration activities. Now, firstly, it's not cause for concern because let's identify it. The Americans do have substantial experience and substantial knowledge, industrial knowledge within the sector. Namibia has got zero. Well, on that nerks. We can't even write home to anyone. We were just peddling fuel products, meaning downstream, that fancy word that people love using now. And for some reason, these guys in the mining industry try to sound completely, because I'm assuming that they just want to sound different from the farming industry or from agriculture. Because agriculture also has a supply chain and also has channels and also has upstream and downstream situations. It just manifests with a lot more people involved. But for the love of me, I've never seen a pipeline being a river. I've never seen it. With the Russians, obviously, with the fated Nord Stream 1 pipeline that ran from Russia to Germany back in 2022, obviously, you know, suffering the fate of the explosion that, you know, that was enacted on it. In which, in one case, is obviously, in many cases, an act of war. Don't worry, the Russians already know who, they know who did it. The Norwegians can say they don't know anything and that their investigation doesn't point to anything concrete because they were still pointing towards that rogue Ukrainian unit that supposedly had access to the pipeline. But, there were just too many suspicious characters, and the more obvious, most obvious ones, who were present on that day, unfortunately, were the Americans. But, getting back to the point that I was making. So, if any of you have seen the American ambassador's social media presence, specifically on Facebook, homeboy is, he's got a social media presence, way stronger than your favorite influencer, because, and I'm not talking about follows, reactions, and those kinds of things. I'm talking about how often his office posts about his regular field visits across Namibia from accompanying local authority politicians in various sectors, looking at corporate social responsibility initiatives or humanitarian initiatives, let's use a broader umbrella term, to industrial developments in the oil exploration sector of Namibia. Now, for now, it seems that most of the American, industrial efforts in Namibia are attributed to the oil exploration sector. So, I've outlined a whole bunch of weaknesses for Namibia. I've outlined it. And I've also outlined to you fellow Namibians that, and this is in previous sessions, not just of the home run, but also of my Sunday morning take, that there's a hidden unknown. And I call it a hidden unknown, but in many scenarios, what people would call, in terms of political science planning, would be the unknown unknowns, which is a bit of a moniker. It's a bit of a tongue twister situation, because unknown unknowns. And then someone asks you, how do you know that this unknown is unknown? Probably you just did not see it, or you probably have not heard about it, which is obviously the basis and even the further reinforcement that it is an unknown unknown, because if you haven't heard it, you haven't seen it, it hasn't made itself visible, then yes, it's an unknown variable. But variables have one consistent characteristic to them. Variables, in economic census or scenarios, variables are either purposefully positioned there by one or more entities or parties who are focal participants in a situation. For example, if you're going to do oil exploration, you're going to first have to give lease out licenses, both exploration and mining. And if results if there are positive results that yield from these licenses, you're going to give further approvals with further particular negotiations in order to understand, what will be the further activities that said particular mining entity or oil exploration entity will now activate and basically install. Now, to activate and install, this still describes the situation that the AFCFTA does not want us actually to pursue. This particular activity is a scenario of looking at primarily how to improve trade between the rest of us, between the rest of Africa, between the rest of the SADC members, between everybody else. Now, The spoiler alert that I warned you guys about starts technically off in this morning's session specifically, is that South Africa and Egypt lead or are front runners basically in bridging the trade gap between themselves and other African countries. I'll say it between themselves and other African countries. Trade is a very sensitive activity to undertake. Trade is an activity based upon security, based upon stability, based upon the opportunity of extracting your returns on investment. So if you, as a Namibian company, wish to export into the SADC region specifically, you're going to look for the first few things. Is there insurance? Is there secure banking? Is there a sound and stable political framework in that country? Can I, if a commercial dispute occurs, can I approach local authorities for, to assist in the dispute? And is there a manner in terms of anchoring your business further in said market in Africa? So far, the South Africans are the best equipped. Let's just identify game for what game is. The South Africans are the best equipped. The South Africans are also the best at bridging any trade gap that you wish to envisage. They're the best. At great length, some fanfare had been made by, some of the developments from some other African countries. But the concern is still one based upon how do we view what's the ideal picture that we want to see happening across the African continent. And the ideal picture happening across the African continent is a picture that has to look at the scenarios of everybody having the opportunity of leveraging this one salient, unexplored mechanism between African countries, which is trade between each other. However, I also did warn you, dear listeners, that there would be a couple of African countries who would dominate the trade discussion. I'll mention it again. Who would dominate the trade discussion? This now has ultimately been vindicated by the article my colleague has written, Hinumenua Erastus, specifically. That's this morning's lead article in the Village e-paper for this Friday morning session. It is an exquisite read. It is an exquisite read. So I do, actually advise you to get yourself a coffee or a tea, whatever your particular poison might be, have a read and peruse through some of the knowledge contained within. Now, Egypt and South Africa are already dominating the intra-African trade, even though there is an indication that trade in the continent flattened between 2023 and 2024. But just to give you a little bit of a snippet, a small microscopic view. Between 2023 to 2024, intra-African trade exports fell. That's now exports between African countries, what I'm sending to Botswana or what I'm sending to Angola, fell by more than $6.3 billion, which disproportionately affected the part of Africa's trade basket that circulates within the continent. Now, most of this intra-African trade, guess what, is fixated or circulates or orbits around two of Africa's big economies. Nigeria is one, remember, and this is just taking the principle of population. South Africa is, with its multiple layers of nuanced industrial activity. Egypt, I don't, to be honest, guys, I don't know much about Egypt, although the media reports, I remember following back in 2011 when Mohamed Morsi from the Muslim Brotherhood tried to become the first civilian president of Egypt, the economic woes were not ideal. And there's a few other stories that I'm reading, obviously, about Egypt. For example, Egypt and its capital, Cairo, they also have like similar Namibian issues, like housing, affordable housing being an issue, or its issues, for example, looking at, you know, how to take a very ancient city like Cairo into the next modern era. And, you know, it's one of Africa's oldest cities, just to be honest with you. And it's a city, obviously, that has had great, that has great historical relevance. And it's not just Cairo, it's also Alexandria. Alexandria was also the hub of knowledge that, what's his name? Alexander the Great built, because the city is literally named after Alexander the Great, Alexandria. But then it also housed, one of the wonders of the ancient world, the Library of Alexandria that was burnt down, that apparently contained so much knowledge that was lost to the human world in that famous fire. It is only accounted for in various historical texts of this library's particular cultural and knowledge wealth. And it was a site never seen or never heard of in the ancient world before, up until when Alexander the Great constructed or had that city made sort of like the focal point, one of the focal points of his empire. Now, history aside, obviously, okay, not history aside, actually, because history does inform of these various trends. Countries like Egypt and South Africa have also great historical linkages, not just to the world, but to each, but also to other African countries, and also to various, you know, various other geographic locations around the world. So Egypt is the whole of the Middle East. Then you've got South Africa, that was the literal connecting route, the connecting route to India, to the rest of Southeast Asia. And obviously providing the opportunity for various other explorers to reach the likes of Australia and New Zealand, like Thomas Cook, the famous British explorer. I just don't know if he went around Cape of Good Hope or if he came around Magellan's Pass, which is around the southern point of South America. I just don't know if he literally went, you know, south westwards from England, or if he went around Africa, which is southeastwards, heading to Australia and New Zealand. But this has obviously been one of the more focal points, how Africa does have or was like a skipping station in the international trade routes. And even if you go read up about the High Seas Treaty that I made mention of, you would discover how the Portuguese, the Spanish, the Dutch, the French, the British, the even at one stage the Austrians, and even at one stage the Russians, and even at one stage who else was there? The Italians obviously came a little bit later on. But you go read the earliest involvements in terms of how Africa in its own right started becoming like this, you know, new frontier, because the idea was always to find a way that was not the Silk Road across land from China and India to Europe, but rather to find a high seas road around the southern tip of Africa or somewhere to get to the same destinations in Asia. And obviously, in the greater scheme of things of the historical or of historical colonialism, what I've discovered is that you've got early colonialism, which was South America, North America, Asia, and late colonialism, which became Africa and other parts. Let's, for example, say the Pacific Island nations and the likes, and places like Hawaii. They became like the late colonialism. I advise you to read up on those two schools of thought. You get early colonialism and you get late colonialism. Namibia was part of the late colonialism trend because of the Berlin Conference. And these set the scene. They set the scene specifically in understanding what Africa has to offer itself, what Africa has to try and achieve versus some of the other particular geopolitical developments. Now, currently, I'm going to factor this in, tying it into this article as well. SADC's international relations or foreign relations ministers or foreign affairs ministers are currently, from today, they're going to meet in the Kruger National Park in South Africa in Skukuza, that's the place's name, in Mpumalanga, regarding to basically mull over to, I don't know if they didn't say they're going to plan. It just said these guys are meeting to engage about the Southern African developments, or not the Southern African developments, but the geopolitical, global geopolitical developments that is impeding trade. So the core concern, what an international relations minister has to worry about, not a finance minister, an international relations minister has to worry about, is what direct impact does the global developments, specifically in the tariff policies espoused by the United States, the sort of like the rejection of the global climate initiatives, also by the United States, as well as also the rejection of how to look at the United Nations, which we all are subscribing to, but unfortunately, the United States wants to sort of like throw their own creation they want to flush it down the toilet. Their own creation. So we face a dilemma, even as Namibia, we face a dilemma of what this actually translates to, because the two particular sectors that dominated Egypt, or that come through from the overall intra-African trade aspect, had been trade specifically in transport equipment, and then there was glass and stone products. Transport equipment obviously helping with, you know, the most dynamic sector on the African continent, which is transport, not mining. Mining relies probably on transport a lot. So too would ICT, like the vice president for Huawei said back in last week, that being Madam Hannah Hantru, that specifically you'd have to look at ICT as a support sibling. You know, that sibling, that last born sibling, that the younger sibling that has to play a support role to the older siblings. Not that we've ever seen that happen in any household. We're just obviously imagining a situation. I've also never seen it. But that is the particular image that you also have to maintain in your head. Now, ICT has to be that connecting backbone. It has to be that nervous system for all the other sectors. The other sectors have to talk to each other. The other sectors have to know that there is something known as network integrity, data integrity, systems integrity, and it allows for the connectivity of their core functions, which could be transport, to operate seamlessly, without hindrance, without disruption, without a potential blackout of power failure, or like South Africa used to call it, load shedding, which technically was blackouts and power failures, but for some reason Eskom made the most. Look, guys, if you go interrogate the word load shedding, you take the word load. You split because how Eskom presented to the whole world and South Africa was combining two words together. So you had the word load and you had the word shed. S-H-E-D, shed, to shed something. Now, a dog sheds hairs. A dog sheds hair. A cat sheds hair. What else also sheds something? A snake sheds its old skin. And some other reptilian variants as well also shed an old skin. Sharks shed a row of teeth because they grow a new set of teeth. So we've seen shedding in real life. We know of shedding. Now, to shed a load is literally to think of a snake shedding its old skin, or a what's the thing's name, or a dog shedding hair between seasons, because the moment you go from winter to back to summer at the end of this year, you'll see if you've ever guys ever seen a, you know, a dog in your family or someone that has the long hair, the long hair dogs, they suddenly shed like batches of hair. That's just because of the seasonal change. They just shed like batches of hair. But when it's like in the summer period of the year, there is like minimal shedding of hair. It has to do with how dogs also internally manage their body temperatures, because they've got hair on their bodies, whereas we humans are exposed. We don't have as much hair, but we also do have it, but not as much hair as dogs. So for dogs, the hair is literally their skin. It's part of their skin. For us humans, our skin is our skin. The hair is secondary. The hair functions like a cooling mechanism also for us. Now, to load shed is you are shaking off a load of something. Now, economically, I never heard any of the South African journalists ever interrogate why the word load shedding was used in the South African economy. To interrogate the term of, so does that mean you are switching off the lights with us since we are a load on your network? If there are any South Africans listening right now, you should go and ask your local authorities, your politicians, your local Eskom technician, why did they settle on the word load shedding? Because load shedding sounds like shedding a burden, which is a city, a suburb, a neighborhood, certain industries. That's what load shedding sounds like. So it was a burden, identification of a burden. But anyway, so we obviously see that there had been certain positives in certain sectors, for example, transport, glass and stone products being one of the largest traded items, which obviously formed part of this. It noted here the steepest intra-African, there were contractions obviously, but in many scenarios these were products that were also greatly in demand, because you can see that they are in great demand, glass, stone and transport equipment. Chemicals also featured, specifically in the movement between the various African economies, because there are certain economies that can produce chemicals and some that don't have the infrastructure as yet. And then also you saw the staples like vegetables, minerals, textiles, clothing, wood products, hides and skins, and footwear. But footwear is part of clothing and textiles, doch man. You can't put footwear separate from clothing. But anyway, so there's a lot of semi-processed, final processed, and raw form products being shipped, moved about the African continent. And so far, it seems we are seeing some headway being made. The aim, as I want to see more of this, I really want to see more of this. The impact obviously is a discussion of how these economies, these major economies, Nigeria is obviously for West Africa. South Africa, primarily for Southern Africa. Egypt, definitely for North Africa. But Egypt has also got a, lot of partners like Ethiopia. Kenya is also in the East African, zone there. There's definitely, Algeria on the other side of North Africa, Algeria with Morocco. And all of these particular zones that I'm mentioning to you have the opportunity of enlarging their role specifically on the continental trade perspective. Now, we have to obviously see that how we're going to fit into this discussion. I will position it this way, which will make it very clear for you in terms of what has been observed for the past 5 months. So far, the largest, let me rather say it, the largest optics, the largest fanfare engagements that have taken place have been the EU, Russia. Then there was obviously also the particular developments, that are now coming about from various other countries. But the EU and Russia so far have had the highest profile engagements in Namibia regarding, taking the trade and bilateral relationships between Namibia and the two respective parties, that being Russia and the EU, to the next level. On an AU scenario, we've not seen our local, I won't say local, because that actually means I would be talking about mayors and councillors and three governors. So we haven't seen Namibia step up the same activity it had back in 2024 and 2023. What's the minister's name? She's now at Home Affairs, Lucia Ebumbu. And I actually respected what she did back in 2023 and 2024 as the former Minister of Trade and Industrialization. Going to Ghana, meeting her Ghanaian contemporary, her Ghanaian counterpart, and basically them trying to empower and instill and ignite the AFC-FTA for meaningful gains, both for Namibia and Ghana. She obviously, highlighting and citing the various particular benefits of looking internally into Namibia. She did a lot of that particular sort of groundwork. However, we're not seeing the same particular African perspective from the current Namibian administration. I'm talking about this being President Nandi Ndaitwah's current administration. There is no particular. I haven't seen anything substantial saying Namibia through SADC into AFC-FTA, championing AU particular projects and ideals, or Namibia and AU looking to expand things in AU. Even though in today's particular e-paper, you will find a little industry brief highlight snippet way at the end where Namibia is now. And I have to get myself that little audio. Namibia is now exporting meat products. We're now exporting live cattle to Mauritius. Great stuff. If we could do it for Madagascar as well, if we can do it for probably Mozambique as well, if we could do it for anyone else, why not? Namibia just stands to gain. We won't lose out. Then we obviously also have the internal trade aspects. Specifically, if we have to look at Namibia's medium-term growth. So I'm lumping them all together, these various trade activities that link into this African trade scenario. So on a Namibian scale of things, for Namibia, what's going for us, according to what the Bank of Namibia, and that's also one of the snippets in the briefs, is that our tourism sector, our uranium mining, and the other finance and the financial services sectors of Namibia will be sort of like the flag bearer, the flying the flag of robust economic activity in the coming months. So this is the medium-term growth discussion that was highlighted there. And it obviously points towards a, you know, once again, there is a perspective, the framing is that we've got to look to what are the pressures out there that are cascading into the Namibian economy. This is obviously from fuel, in many scenarios. This is obviously fuel. This is also a scenario of looking at, you know, what other kinds of trade or commercial activities are under threat from the geopolitical situation, which the ministers, the foreign relations ministers, are currently engaging in, or would be engaging in South Africa in the come from today heading forward. Now, you don't have to look very far to also try and identify that across the world, you do find zones of influence in trade. One of them to the west, two of them technically, or three of them to the west technically, is that would be the North American cluster of countries. That will be Mexico, United States, and Canada. After I discovered last year that what happens in the U.S. context between the U.S. and Canada is a scenario of Mexican goods being imported into the USA, and then the USA absorbs those goods and also channels those goods into its own trade products that it sells to other economies, wherever, whoever buys them. Now, this speaks towards a scenario of why would this kind of a situation happen? Well, it seems like it's sort of like the same kind of scenario that we observe. We see, for example, like copper products coming into Namibia from Zambia, heading to Walvis Bay, the trade corridor, obviously, or the transport corridor, obviously. However, the scenario is one based upon whose copper is it actually? Whose copper is it actually? For example, the Europeans highlighted to the Americans back in last year that they don't want to buy American red meat products because they don't know where most of the cattle or red meat products come from. They do know that Mexico has a problem with various kinds of animal health issues specifically, and that the Mexicans sell a lot of their cattle into the American cattle market, but that the cattle from the Mexicans are mixed into the cattle population of the Americans. And that is one of the things of back in the narratives back of 2025, back in last year, on the trade deficit, the scenario that Donald Trump was hammering the Europeans on, is that the Europeans kept telling him, hey, listen, my guy, you guys continuously buy Mexican cattle. You mix that Mexican cattle into your U.S. cattle population, and we don't know what happens, who is who and what is what. Because the Europeans clearly, as a client, and this is one of the things, one of the few times when I asked, what was that CEO of Meatco, Mr. Mushuka Banji, at one stage, who determines the standards that Meatco has to subscribe to when they sell to a client market. And he highlighted, unfortunately, These are standards that are forwarded to Meatco by the client market. So Norway would tell Namibia under what condition they would, what the condition they would like the red meat products to come to them. Packaged in this manner, preserved in this manner, or shipped in this manner, these particular conditions, these terms. And back in 2025, the American government didn't want to hear about that. They actually don't, they did not want to acknowledge that a customer market owns the right to forward terms. If I'm going to buy your product, I want to see the product in a certain state. That's what the Americans didn't want to hear. The Americans still don't want to hear it. Don't worry, I'm not bashing them. I'm just giving you realities that many people have brought out. Many sane, thinking, level-headed individuals around the world have brought out and highlighted a tariff is a negative. A tariff is an extra tax on a customer. It's not going to impact the exporting country to you. It's going to impact the importing company and the customers that were consuming that product. A downside also has been obviously that the globalization is under threat. It's now going to become various particular protectionist zones. This is the second of the topics enclosed within this broader African context that we're going to explore. Is that we will potentially see more strategic trade relations pop up. So SADC is now meeting, its foreign minister is now meeting in Skukuza in South Africa. And I actually want to bring you up that statement that came through yesterday. So they're going to meet there. They're going to talk primarily about what common pathways they'll have to achieve in terms of identifying developments that could try to alleviate pressures from the current situation of not just the Strait of Hormuz, the block equals unblock scenario, but rather also a scenario of what is, you know, what else could be found out there to try and mitigate certain particular threats. So, SADC ministers, they are calling this, they've even got this fancy poster, to chart a unified regional response to global geopolitical shifts. But the response, they've already got the response. They've already got the ammunition for this response. Trade more between each other. Trade more. Tanzania has oil. Angola has oil. DRC, I think, has oil and gas. How about speeding up refinery capabilities in each of these countries, and you start selling to us, to each other? You see, guys, those illegal, I'll call them contraband smugglers at the north of, in the north of Namibia, from Angola into Namibia. The guys who continuously get their fuel confiscated by the Namara officials and the police. You see, if the Angolan fuel processors or refiners came to Namibia and looked at the cars that us Namibians are driving and came and interviewed and spoke to and did market research and analysis with all the car dealerships here in Namibia, and then they asked and looked at what kind of octane, quality of octane is being sold here, and then signed a strategic agreement as well that allows also the fuel retailers, that's now the service stations, the opportunity to also buy into the overall closer trade ties between Namibia and Angola. Because it would be beneficial for Namibia and for Angola, basically, to ink this kind of an agreement between both countries, which technically would mean Angola would have a client market like Namibia. And for Namibia, all it would mean is instead of now waiting for a ship to bring our fuel to us, We've got trucks from Namibian companies that can go across the border unhindered and come back. Load up, fuel up, and come back. Now I ask you, do you think fuel will be cheaper if that scenario happened? Because here's the concern, what the guy from the Dangot refinery said, the, what was his name? The MD, is that Nigerian fuel, the refinery has to buy Nigerian fuel at international prices, because Nigeria is obviously part of OPEC. So, even if the Dangot refinery is right across the Nigerian oil field, where the oil is pumped, the price set has to be of an international standard. It cannot be in Naira at a localized standard. It has to be at an international standard. Now, I have a sneaky suspicion Angola is also part of OPEC. And this would still mean that we would still probably pay the same price. So if we're currently just below the 25 Namibian dollar mark, we would still stay below the 25 Namibian dollar mark. So that basically would mean, does your money actually get value? No, it doesn't. It would not. It wouldn't even make sense. So, thus, we face a dilemma of what would this actually translate to if this scenario was to be explored. Another scenario that also needs to be explored is those potential oil-producing countries or oil-producing countries in SADC, what would they be able to offer? Because here is an interesting thing, guys. OPEC is not a UN body. I'll say it again. OPEC is not a UN body. And much of OPEC's particular aim was is that OPEC has to protect the petrodollar of the United States, which is an agreement between the Gulf countries, which are the Arab nations, that's now Saudi Arabia, UAE, Oman, Kuwait, I don't know if Iraq is part of the GCC, but those guys, you'll find the majority of them in the OPEC, cluster. They are the ones responsible for telling the rest of us in the world, please buy the oil or the fuel, because they also have fuel refineries, in US dollars. In US dollars. So next time, when, even though we've got a confirmation of it a little bit earlier in this month, a little bit earlier in this year, back in, I think, it was March, when Minister Amutse confirmed that our fuel does come out of directly out of the Middle East and some other locations. Because they gave it was like a vague explanation of where the fuel actually comes from when 28 February happened. Where the fuel actually comes from. Now, as those SADC ministers are meeting there today, this morning, in Skukuza, I hope, I really hope that at the forefront of their agenda is that they are basically charting a course of saying, you know what? How about we don't buy fuel and oil at a US dollar rate? And we don't determine the price per barrel at a US dollar rate. I hope. I hope. The concern obviously is, what would a country like Angola want? What would a country like Tanzania want? What would a country like DRC like? There's another country here, also in the mix of things. I just want to see what this country is, because it seems like we are branching SADC up into Is that Cameroon? The map that I've got in front of me, guys, it includes. Wow. It includes Cameroon. I did not know that Cameroon, Gabon, Equatorial Guinea, and is that the other Guinea? Because there are three Guineas in Africa. There's Guinea-Bissau, Guinea, Equatorial Guinea, and another Guinea. Yeah. So Angola, DRC, and Tanzania, and Mozambique are the, you know, our four best bets of oil producing nations. I say four best bets of oil producing nations. Namibia and South Africa have the potential to actually go and get the thing because South Africa does have oil. Namibia does have oil. I'll say it again. South Africa does have oil. Namibia does have oil. It's about getting the thing out of the ground. It's the accessibility thing. So, we sit with this question. How do we bridge the gap? That's our second hypothesis. Our first hypothesis was about intra-Africa trade. Was it a scenario not assuming, but stating the obvious for what the obvious will start revealing? We will have these zones of dominance across the continent, which technically reflects who is the center of that zone of dominance. Second hypothesis is the one based upon the SADC ministers meeting today, from today, just until when? From today till Sunday? Yeah. So from today till Sunday. And the third hypothesis. The third hypothesis has been what has been happening on the international realm outside of Africa. And what it could mean for the African continent. Yes, on this Friday morning, we are taking a Pan-African look. I'm not the most enthusiastic Pan-Africanists you'll find out there because first and foremost, I'm not of the framework of thinking of allowing other countries who don't have any forms of democratic way of life but participating. But nonetheless, let me first get the first caller's contribution through coming through this morning. Eagle FM, good morning. How are you doing, Mandume?
I'm alright, man. How are you?
Yeah, long time no see, man. Happy New Year, eh?
I'm telling you, Happy New Year. Just made it, huh?
It's been a long time since we last spoke, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And I remember one thing that we almost close to the what? In the middle of the...
Don't worry. If it's the first time we sing each other, you're getting a Happy New Year. I'm doing this with everybody that I know, even in real life. You should see how surprised some people are when I say, "Hey man, Happy New Year," and they go like, Dwight, it's March. What's wrong with you? Say, like, man, it's the first time we're seeing each other. So yeah.
Yeah, but it's true.
Yep. What do you want to say?
How you been doing this?
I'm okay. You obviously hear me and Helmut, you know. Sometimes derail our own conversations with where the conversation ends up.
That's why you guys are putting us in lamdam, then like, we are not calling anymore.
Yeah, so it's not just Uncle Bona, it's also you guys, it's also you and a few other callers.
Yeah.
No, I'll share the feedback. I'll share the feedback with my partner in crime.
Definitely.
Yep.
Yeah, but we do listen, you know. Yeah. Anyway, we are talking about now for African panel and what you name it. The thing which I want also to highlight when we're talking about like now about the demand and supply and our productive oil and the way we are getting our oil and so on.
Mm.
The thing is that sometimes when I'm looking at the oil of Angola, a lot of people are complaining about the standard.
Yeah.
But for me, I don't think really the standard is the one which is killing our car.
Mm.
No. You remember now, Dwight?
Mm-hmm.
That's the same, like, if I'm every day I'm killing the what, my oil in the container to fill up my car.
Mm.
There's some way I'm going to end up with a problem when it comes to injectors.
Yeah.
Because,
It would be your car's catalytic converter. Have you seen that white smoke?
Yeah.
That some car.
Exactly. Yeah. Definitely, because I don't know how the oil work, but I saw it many times where if you fill up a container, after you fill you put in the car, there's in the bottom, there was something dirty. Even our oil.
Oh, it's sediment. What was it? My.
Yeah, me, I don't know how to call it even also.
No, it's literal sediment. It's refining sediment. It's the one, there was this economist that I watched, that I still follow on YouTube. He explained, literally just after what happened to Venezuela and Maduro, that the Americans, I don't know if you saw Mandume, the Americans were telling everyone, oil is the same everywhere. But, now that is the biggest, it's the biggest lie that exists in geology specifically because, anyone who knows about working in the oil sector and has seen oil extraction across the world, they will tell you that the oil that you find in Iran and in Saudi Arabia is very fluid-like. It runs like water. But the oil that you find in Venezuela is like it's like a thick black, mass. It's the thing is it has very few, the ability to flow like water.
To flow, like a water now.
Now, we don't know what is the African standard. So Angola is a different geographic location. DRC, which is now discovering oil, is a different geographic location. Tanzania, right next to DRC, is now also building and also has oil. Now, we don't know what is the difference in the oil standards between these SADC countries.
Yeah, and remember when they've been talking about Namibia, the 200 and ton above million.
Yeah.
It's like, there's also the quality. It's kind of like what they call it? They say something, there's a name, man. What did they call in the industry of exploration? But me, I just forget, but it's kind of like,
If you describe it, Mandume, then we will have an idea because if it's more fluid-like, then.
Yeah, no, it's just like, almost like, when you are trying even to refinery like a grease. Because it's like, you can take a cadre of Popmos. You know how many containers you can take from the cadre of Popmos.
Yeah.
It's very small, but you can fill up like maybe even 5 liters.
Yeah.
That's how the quality of Namibian oil is we are talking about. And that is the quality also explaining. For the Venezuela.
Yeah.
Because Venezuela oil, you can make it, maybe 3 times that one for Iran you are talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, you see. So I think, and the Angolan is the same almost. That's why they are saying it's making car to be what?
It's a heavy oil.
Heavy oil.
Yeah, it's a heavy oil. So, exactly. Oh my goodness. That's why we cannot buy Angolan. My goodness.
Yeah.
Mandume, it's a good thing that you actually called right now because you are now filled in the mystery link that we have had since 2024 of trying to understand why we can't buy Angolan fuel products. But
it's that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why, but for me, it's not really like it's a problem to our car, but the problem I see is that when you don't feel the what, at the pump station. Then always killing in the container. It always end up to have this brokerage where you are saying sometimes it start smoking this white smoke which are coming out of the white
exhaust.
And sometimes also it's the same also like ours because I'm telling you, look at even the people who are having at the farms and they are using the generators. This generator always having problem. when it comes to their filth and whatever.
Mm.
Because every time you are putting the oil in the container, and the container, I don't know how they do that for that dirt which always remain in the bottom.
No, it's sediment. No, it comes from the fuel. Yeah. Mandume, it literally comes from the fuel. Yeah, it comes from the fuel because I once heard from a mechanic.
Oh, that's why sometimes in the long run we have a problem with when it comes to what? Fuel pump, ne?
Yeah, because it has to do, it's literally impurities that are found in the thing. Because what was the guy? It was a mechanic or someone that explained to me that sometimes if you don't fill up your tank, your car's tank, then there's like this collection of sediment at the bottom of your fuel tank. And then there will come a time where the fuel injector, not the fuel injector, what's the fuel pump?
The pump.
Yeah, in the engine will have an issue because that sediment is now coming through. It's lying at the bottom. And then if you keep, if you continuously throw in like 100, 50, you know, of petrol, then the sediment later on starts channeling into the fuel pump. And then the pump is the one that obviously breaks down.
Yeah, I see now.
That's why the service is always about replacing the pumps, the oil and the fuel pump. Yeah.
Yeah. Now it makes sense.
Yeah. So I also didn't take any sense of it because I thought, you know, petrol and diesel has to be properly refined. It doesn't have impurities, but the impurities sometimes come from the service station.
Uh-huh.
The impurities sometimes comes from the trucking company that brings the fuel to the service station. The impurity sometimes comes from the ship and the cargo ship and those fuel storage.
Oh yeah, at the coast where they are getting it. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
So at many times these impurities are just transferred in the supply chain.
Uh-huh.
And it's the things that we don't know about as consumers. But you and I, we have to find out here and there when a mechanic decides to talk to us, when he's not angry with us, then he decides to talk to us and give us real knowledge. Then we discover, so this is why I need to replace the fuel filter. In the broader scheme of things, what you just mentioned now, Mandume, is a question of these SADC ministers that are now meeting in South Africa.
Mm.
Will they now actually, I now see that our minister is not present because she's technically meeting someone else this morning here in Windhoek. It's basically two other ministers that she's meeting. A minister from the Kyrgyz Republic and a minister from Philippines. So she's meeting two dignitaries today. One now at 10 a.m. and one at 10 to 1. So the concern from this is obviously, it would have been nice if our minister was there.
Yeah, exactly. But I think they have to send a delegation of a representative.
They have to.
There must be somebody.
But they have to. But what are they going to go say, Mandume? Because
that is the problem.
Because the minister, she also cannot act without a cabinet meeting where the ministers and the president had to now strategize about what the geopolitical situation does, because Namibia, for some reason, and this is now where I take fault with us, we are trying to act outside of SADC.
Which is true. Which is true. This is what I find it is so funny. But mostly we are in touch with South Africa.
But that relationship with South Africa is now more like, we've known we've dated each other for so long.
No.
Please allow me to date other people. That's not the kind of
relationship.
You are still my boyfriend at home, or you are still my girlfriend at home, but let me allow to see other people as well. Let me touch. Let me go see what the weather is like on the other side of the mountain.
In the other side, but you're not allowed to go.
Yeah. So we go and flirt with the EU. We go and flirt. We're now greatly flirting with China. We are now in love with Russia. We're now in love with Russia. We're now in, who are we also flirting online with? There is another country.
We are all over. Even America, we are not really like out of with them.
Japan and South Korea now.
You see.
Through the green hydrogen projects, Japan and South Korea also.
They come on board also.
And then America is like the relationship, the toxic relationship we don't want, but we are continuously attracted to.
It's a sugar, it's a what they call, not a sugar mommy man, what they call them? This is, how can they call this a white man? It's a sugar daddy. It's a sugar daddy. For us. For long. We can't get away from them.
That's what I'm saying. It's a toxic relationship which we are attracted to, but we know it's bad for us. So, yeah. So that's Namibia. And in between there, we don't know what Brazil might do.
Yeah, odds. Yeah.
But Brazil is like this mysterious, you know, economic partner that we don't know, but we know. We know where they are.
We are not really like, we want to put a hand in there, but we are like, maybe.
We want to hold hands with Brazil, sure. But we don't know. So that is Namibia, but it seems like Namibia is literally cutting itself out of the rest of Africa, because this is a greedy international relations engagement that we are running, meaning we are very greedy.
It's what I'm telling you. You remember the other time I'm saying, no, when you have a slogan of like, you are friend to all,
enemy to no one. Yeah.
No, those guys, this is a reality, doesn't work like that. There's no way. Some people just hit you because you are too short or you are too tall. Or you are too fat or you are too thin. I'm telling you.
Which is true.
I'm telling you. And that is, that's why I'm wondering, like, guys, where are we heading? Sometimes you need a big brother. Like, you just, you know, some people are having a big brother, like now, we are talking about Russia, we are talking about China.
Yeah.
Those are the big lock of the wrestling.
Yeah.
Now, Namibia, you are all over.
No, those guys are big show. Those guys are big show.
The big show.
Yeah,
exactly.
They're the big show of wrestling.
Now you are here.
Namibia is now trying to be Rey Mysterio, and we're trying to find out. we're like this 1 meter tall midget, and we're like, how are we taking on this 3 meter tall wrestler?
Hey, how do survive with you?
So
tomorrow you say, no, my friend, I'll come take what I want. Yeah. Now you are, you don't rely on, and that one, even the Big Show will tell you, no, my friend, I thought you say you are enemy to nobody. That's why we are. We'll let you to land the show alone.
and the scenario we have to obviously look at, Mandume, is that Namibia, for some reason, we are trying to channel as much economic benefit through us that then cascades into SADC. But I don't know if we went and told SADC that we are busy with this very blatant, this very obvious economic strategy. Because it is very obvious.
You know, not really, because remember one thing, Namibia now, even their fraud swapo, they are fighting the court, they are in the court with a fish, this fish. But you remember one thing, when you look at Spain, how many fish are we supplying in Spain alone?
Exactly.
I'm telling you, more than even the what we take to Botswana or Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
Then you wonder now, because remember, one thing I'm always advocating to our Namibian government is that, guys, we are here crying for high unemployment.
Yeah.
But we have opportunity to do business in SADC.
Yeah.
Why every time we are just like to have a dollar or to have a euro currency, or to talk about even in top, to have a UK pound?
Yeah.
Why we never talk about to have money from even like Botswana, which the police is up, or the money from Zimbabwe?
Mm.
Because we have a lot of Zimbabwean here. So is that money not going to circulate and also to bring us something? When we are exchanging maybe our fish with Zimbabwean.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, we have also our Namibian people who can have stores in Zimbabwe.
And even though we have, as SADC, we have a very big shoreline, Mandume. Because there are so many African countries in SADC that have a shoreline. And I see now on a map here, just before we started talking,
I see that for some reason, SADC, the region of SADC extends up into Cameroon. I never knew Cameroon is part of SADC because the map that is shown here is Cameroon, the two Guineas, there's a Gabon.
But I think Cameroon also, it's not really SADC. They are somewhere, but they are, say, you know, this is geopolitical where you are, if you are colonized by France, you become a flank country.
The French community. But I also see Uganda and Rwanda and Burundi here part of the equation as well.
Mm-hmm.
The map on this poster shows Uganda, Cameroon, Gabon, Equatorial Guinea, Rwanda, and Burundi. And I never knew these guys were in SADC. I thought that they were not in SADC.
Some of them, I think they are interested to.
I know Burundi was.
But
I know Burundi was, yeah.
Yeah, Burundi was, and who was also part of it. I think it's even DRC is between.
Yeah.
Is SADC, and the other side also is what belongs to those France,
Gabon, they call themselves. Gabon and Equatorial Guinea.
Yeah. You see? But the problem for me is that when you look at the SADC, why we cannot come up with one colors?
No.
Because remember, I'm going to South Africa.
But no, they will be dominant, but first finish. Yeah, finish your sentence.
Okay. Yeah. Let me say now, if I'm going to, I'm going to Angola.
Yeah.
I can use South Africa currency.
Yeah.
Zambia, I can use it. And Botswana, I can use it. Zimbabwe is the same also.
Yeah.
But why we can not even rely to use South African land in SADC, the whole SADC. Instead of us to trade between, but we have to use American dollars. For what?
Exactly. Hmm?
Because sometimes it's not about oil alone. No. Sometimes some stuff, even like a food stuff.
Yeah.
Why should I have to go and buy major meal from Zambia, but I have to have American dollar for what?
Yeah.
I know that the South African land can work also there. Why we not even just rely on the South African land?
Yeah.
The problem, I think, the SADC country, really, they are the one who really. But I like the relationship between what is developing between Namibia and Botswana.
Mm.
Even you can use a ID to go to Botswana,
exactly.
Which is good. Why cannot you why cannot you extend it to Angola even in South Africa also?
Yep.
And later on, Zimbabwe.
Yep. But you know, we are arguing with. Okay, it's not an argument, but it will become an argument between us and South Africa because of the Orange River.
Yeah, that's the problem again. And remember also, South Africa also, the what they are doing now currently.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
This of chasing the foreigners.
Mm.
It's those are things which are, I think. Not taking us anywhere at all.
Yeah.
Because remember one thing that you cannot build their own country without involving foreigners.
Mm.
If you look in Namibia, even though we are not really happy, but look at Zimbabwe and what they done.
Mm.
If you are talking about the private school here, you are talking about a private hospital.
Mm.
You talk about they are the one, and mostly benefiting even that. But mostly, even though what they are doing, they are bringing their brothers and sisters instead of recruiting Namibian.
Mm.
Which sometimes, but it really is building up because now they are giving knowledge to our kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, in long run, to be a problem again.
Yeah, it is already a problem. If we now use the word problem correctly.
It is, because remember one thing, you remember the 5 years old?
Yeah.
He said Zimbabwean, but nothing happened to him. But if it was done in Zimbabwe, I'm telling you that, but if it was a Namibian, that person is supposed to be already deported.
Yeah.
Because remember, only Namibian, which I think they take a lot of nonsense for my country. But
you are right.
Look at this kid with small one from Angola.
Yeah.
They are looming our hostility here, but just imagine a Namibian taking in a capana to go and sell in Angola. Hey, you'll be example of everybody. I'm telling you.
And yeah, what I also
I'm telling about what we know.
And what I also saw there last year when I was on that particular tour that the NDB took us, a bunch of us media representatives there on that northern tour. And then we were, the tour guide drove us with us literally from Odibo, where the church is, to Oshikango.
Yeah.
And we had to follow the border.
Mm.
You, Mandume, I know you've seen
you
it now.
The people out, eh?
But the Angolan, the Angolan border patrol guy, they must wear an, a green uniform. Homeboy is walking across the border into us with his rifle, his uniform, to come and drink. If whatever
what
homebrew,
whatever
yeah,
because
exactly. There was a little bar just across, you, just across the fence.
I mean, you cannot do the same. I'm telling you, the Angolan do deal with you.
Yeah.
They will tell you, case Angola.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, but if you go in here and check them, how many of them they're having proper paper to be Namibia? No, none of them exist.
Yeah.
I'm telling you. That's why you see even the students which are studying here, sometimes that they, they end up only come to like a, get a visa.
Mm.
Then after all, he drop out of school, he start his hustling in Namibia. But in, you cannot do that in Angola. I'm telling you, they would, the law will deal with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the problem I think we have in SADC. Sometimes I think what you apply to me, your rules, I will apply the same to you.
Mm.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like that.
Yeah, yeah. It's also one of the concerns that, like, of the things I've heard in South Africa about us Namibians, apparently these local South Africans are a little bit annoyed that they say, if it's not a Zimbabwean, then it's a Namibian that they will find. In, you know, like, you know, like in executive white collar jobs. But obviously it's a scenario of, it's a shared relationship.
Namibia, okay. In Namibia, I think they are cool with us.
Yeah. No, they are cool with us.
The Zimbabwean and the Nigerian, my friend, those are people who are been targeted by South Africa. Because,
yeah.
But those people sometimes, when you're looking, sometimes you don't, you can do whatever. You can sell your bloom.
Mm.
You can do whatever we are doing. You can drive a taxi. You can go to Kapana.
Mm.
But seriously, don't get involved in our politics. And what this is what the Zimbabweans are doing. I'm telling you, this
that
is what
true.
The Zimbabweans are
true.
Doing.
That
yeah.
is true.
Really, like that, we are messing up our country. And that's why we are like Namibia now. You see, we are drowning like the Zimbabwean, the way Zimbabwean economy went down.
Mm.
That's how we are heading to.
Mm.
But Mike, I said, okay, when it comes to our material, sometimes when you look the standard of selling our things, I think the standard is also playing an important part where we cannot do much.
Mm.
Especially when, let me say, you are developing country like us to sell a finished product to developed country.
Yeah.
The standard which they put up for us there is a colonized one.
Yeah.
Seriously, because you cannot tell me you only need the beef for AA plus.
Or you will only send for AA plus, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you see now. And all or even a fish, they don't want it, they want it also informal of law which is not even done.
Mm.
But that is already like you are telling me to give a job to your people.
Mm.
Because the moment I'm selling the raw material from you, I'm from you, it means there must be a factory which are going to do the finish, to do that, to be a finished product.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's even coming back to me, which I'm the one from, just if meeting even our fish.
Mm.
All our fish are going to Spain. But now our factory, we have to go and buy it from South Africa. Let's say like we don't have a sea.
Mm.
My friend, we are spending like 400 million to buy fish from South Africa.
Yeah. Which was maybe just caught here in our waters, and then the boat just went south and processed it in Cape Town or in Port Elizabeth, and then it comes back to us as ING.
Oh my God. We are not learning economy like that. No.
Yeah.
No. That is how you are telling people, no, we have a what? 40 something or 50, what you find employment. That's right. The one who giving the job away.
It's actually 60%.
Going to China.
Mandume, it's actually 60%. The overall unemployment rate is 60%.
50, just imagine now.
Yeah. When that report came out in start of 2024, It, I counted all those loose parts together of people who apparently don't want to work and people who cannot find work and who people who lost their work. It looked like 60%.
Just imagine. Ah, we are even more than that. Maybe we are even going to 70, seriously. Because if you look how many graduates we have so far, which are standing 10 years a teacher, a trained teacher, but they cannot get a job.
Do you know what's the other thing? Do you know what's the other thing? Earlier this year, I took a taxi or a Yango on 1st of January, was it the 1st of January, start of this year. A guy tells the guy who's the driver for me. He's from Kietmanshoop or something. He tells me he went on holiday in December. He took leave, went on holiday. He comes back. He's told that he was retrenched.
You see now. Just imagine. How can you retrench me just like that?
He was given leave. He was given holiday leave.
I'm fighting that. No, I'm going to work.
He comes. He literally says he comes back to Windhoek just to find out he was retrenched. How many Namibians has that happened? Yeah. How many since the start of January? And the concern that we're not doing is that the NSA keeps reporting to us about trade and trade commodities and the consumer price index. But the NSA is not asking the minister.
It's growing, but look at the reality. There's nothing much.
Yeah. And
there's no money with our, in our hands.
Yeah. And they're not asking the Ministry of Justice and Labor. Start producing labor statistics so that we can see what the labor trends are. How many people lost their jobs? How many people are going on to welfare programs? How many people will need jobs? How many jobs are available in the economy? We don't get these statistics. These are essential statistics that has to inform the economy, Mandume. And unfortunately, Ministry of Justice and Labor are not playing their part.
No. Mike, to tell you the truth,
It's Dwight Mandume. How did you forget my name?
Dwight, isn't it? Yeah. Dwight, to tell you the truth, I've been in the Minister of Labor portal for more than 7 years. Just imagine.
I'm there for more than 10 years. I've been there for more than 10 years. I even forgot that I had a profile with it.
I'm telling you, then I'm like, hey, this is not a reality. Because you cannot tell me. And why they have a slogan of like a Minister of Labor and the Employment Commission? What kind of employment they create? How many people are benefit out of this Minister of Labor?
Yeah.
Really?
So that labor side of things, ne? I don't know what the Minister Emmanuel and his directors are doing, but he's more fixated on the justice side of his ministry than on the labor side of his ministry. I'm not hearing of any concrete statistics. You know, even if they just produce monthly statistics, we would know what's actually happening. But as far as things go, I don't know what that part of that ministry does.
I'm telling you, that's why I'm saying sometimes I will waste money in nonsense things, like a Minister of Labor to build a good office like that. But literally when it comes to job, they are not doing anything. Even to protect the people who are already employed to get at least a decent salary. Nothing, nada. I don't know what really the purpose of that Minister of Labor, seriously, in Namibia. But seriously, we will see. Maybe things I will change it for the better, but really, the way I'm looking at, there's nothing much. That's why I'm saying there are people who are being exploited by the foreigner who can make so-called investors. Especially if you look at Chinatown, that's one of the examples. Go to the mine, it's even worse. Just imagine a mine where people are supposed to get him decent wages, because remember,
and living conditions and accommodation.
Because in the mind, your lifespan doesn't go far.
Yeah.
But people are not being paid accordingly to the standard of mine. But people are making a lot of money. Every time we heard, even last time we heard that between Namibia and Mali, where B2Gold operate, they make almost like what? How many? 400 something or 200 what something. Billion. But it's just two countries with it operating. But if you look at Namibia, people are, later maybe we are getting a salary, but what else apart from the salary? Did they invest in anything like maybe soccer field? Did they invest in the hospital? Did they invest in the school? Nada. But in Mali, the bit of gold, they are having what? They are putting up solar panels. They are building wind power. And remember, Namibia is a democratic country because now they're always referring to Kamau. That one is a dictator. What they call it? When the military is the one in control of the country, like in Mali.
Yeah.
That's a word what they use. But how can in Mali negotiate nicely with a bit of gold? Then Namibia was democracy. We are getting zero, apart from the salary.
Yeah, and the taxes on the salaries.
And the taxes, and taxes and whatever, nonsense.
Yeah.
But those people are making money. Now, Bitugod is about to cross Namibia, but what are they going to leave us with?
Unemployment?
So sometimes I'm wondering really how our leaders, where we are heading. Just the same way we are saying the minister is supposed to be there. Sometimes I think the minister, if these people are coming, and you know the arrangement, why you cannot challenge your representative to stay? Then you go to the important thing. Because remember, we are talking about SADC. SADC is the most important than the people who are coming here. Even though we are talking about labor, I mean, they are coming to university in Namibia, in what or different field. But sometimes I'm looking at how many even those people who are working in the mine, comparing it to whatever they are talking about. Everybody's talking about green hydrogen and how many people are going to embrace it.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm wondering, man, where we are heading. And you remember, we are all hungry here because Minister of Agriculture, they are not already also doing nothing.
Minister,
if it is not tractor coming from South Africa.
But Minister of Agriculture is not in charge of the farms.
Resettlement farmer. Maybe the resettlement farmer is what they are doing.
Yeah, true.
Because
true.
Apart from that, we don't see much, seriously.
Yeah.
Green, you know, we have a green scheme, which is supposed to be like, now this time we are supposed to harvest. What they are doing? Nothing.
Yeah.
That's why I'm wondering, my brother, if we find ourselves one day, South Africa having different president, and then this president say no, there's will be no truck coming in or going out to Namibia. My friend,
we will implode.
Die for it. We will die.
We will implode.
Remember one thing?
We won't die. We will implode. We will implode.
Because remember one thing, South Africa is feeding us when it comes to food. They are also crowing us when it comes to crow. They are also giving us electricity. Just imagine. Everything from South Africa, even the medicine. We have the man. Ah, no, guys. Then we are talking about the independent country. That's what I'm saying. What is was a man of us to go to for war? It was not about the land which we don't have today. We are all about Namibian. We are all Namibian. Maybe 70% of us we are homeless. Because we are lending. And we don't have a place to live.
But here's the thing. Here's the crux. And this is the mathematics we have to solve, Mandume. There is a scenario where being able to rent, let's say you have a lease on your flat for the next 50 years so that you, your wife, and your children can enjoy the fruits of that flat. It will allow you to at least create wealth, meaning to save money. And buy and spend on other things. Because this is what you see in Germany. This is what you see in Austria. You see it in France. You see it in Spain. You see it in Italy. The concern here is Namibia is confused. We want to come with socialist programs and ideals that you see in the government. But then the reality in the economy is completely private sector.
Exactly.
They allow a local authority like City of Windhoek to sell an erf, which is not even connected, for 500,000. A residential erf. But then the next thing that City of Windhoek also does is that City of Windhoek allows a property developer to come and buy in bulk instead of allowing you, Mandume, who wants
to
a piece,
buy off your title deed, then you start developing it by yourself.
Yeah. Then the second thing the second mistake they make onto that is that they allow the private commercial banks to basically play an active role. And so now,
which is wrong.
If you are a taxi driver now, let's say you on average make 2,000 Namibian dollars a week. So that's 8,000 in a month. And I'm not deducting the petrol and the other needs yet, but let's say it's 8,000 roughly. You make 8,000 a month. You at least want to buy a piece of land and have the opportunity to then build as you go.
Yeah.
But what does City of Windhoek come and tell you? If you're going to buy a piece of land in Sambabasia, you must spend $1 million Namibian dollars
already
to make your property look like your neighbor's properties. So for who is City of Windhoek actually representing? Do they represent the customer, the Namibian?
Do they
represent the private commercial banks of the Namibian economy?
And you know, Dwight, to make it worse, that when you see this, everybody is welcome to buy even a property. Let me tell you now, that's why you find it in Namibia now, people are lending from the Chinese, because there are people who are earning money. And now you are making your people to be poor more because they cannot even go to the bank to take up because they don't have any title deed. Otherwise, if they have, they will be able even to do business. And that's why we have an equal society. We are the second following South Africa.
Yeah.
Just imagine, because now just meant to make it worse, even if you are buying a car, you don't need to have a lawyer. You just go in there with your deposit.
With your cash?
Your cash. Yeah. Then that's all. Maybe from there, just insurance.
Yeah.
But if you are buying a house, you have to have a lawyer. You have to... There are so many things involved.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
Yeah. It must be registered where? It must be registered where? But it's all the work that you can do. You can do it.
Yay. Yay.
But because the banks want to establish an artificial supply chain that in many cases should not exist.
And why should do if the laptop is costing me 1.5 million and the house is the value of the house.
Yeah.
But
another house must be an extra million on top of that 1.5.
The laptop I can pay it off for five years.
Yeah.
But the house have to go for 25 or 20 years.
But now ask yourself the same question. Then there is a Mercedes G. Have you seen? You know the Mercedes G wagon. Some of the tenderpreneurs in Namibia are driving around here, and some of the trust fund babies. That car is worth $3 million. That car is worth $3 million. But that car has to be paid off in 5 years. $3 million in 5 years.
$3 million.
But a $3 million house you have to pay off in 20 years.
There's somebody fooling who and the government.
It's the banks. It's the banks. It's the banks.
They find it like a normal, but it is a parted way.
It's the banks.
Because remember, all of us, we are come from what? Nothing. We don't have anything until you become a prime minister.
Yeah.
Called the honorable.
Yeah.
Then now you are.
Or a government worker. Or you become a government worker.
A government worker. Now you think everything is normal to the person who live in the what? You live in where you used to stay.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
No, it is.
Problem, my friend. And then I'm looking at why everybody is quiet about this system.
No, it is a problem. Because it shows you that there is a fundamental problem with the thinking in how to address an issue in the economy, which is a societal issue. And the core is, for example, you will not hear that they will try to expand the operational budget of the police. The police literally, my sister who is now in Rehoboth is telling me how many times they see on that Rehoboth WhatsApp or Facebook group if people call the police in Rehoboth to respond to a crime incident, the police responds to the person. We don't have buggies because they are not functioning, or the buggies don't have fuel in them. Which is the same thing that happened. The same thing. Do you remember what happened with that massacre in Rundu when the guy killed his family in COVID? The same exact response. But you will not hear in the budgeting being said, okay, safety and security, you guys need more money because you guys need to respond.
More money,
We have a lot more crime.
That's why I'm telling you, but if you look why South Africans are pushing those people, sometimes we say, no, it's wrong, it's what, but in the reality, there are people who are benefiting out of your economy, especially like in Namibia. People who are benefiting out of mostly, not like Kama, we are, you know what they call it? The way of South Africa when they are pushing people.
Xenophobia.
Xenophobia, whatever. But the Zimbabweans are benefiting out of Namibia, my friend. Remember, when you come to this private school, sometimes even government are giving money there. When you come to this private hospital, that's why we don't have medicine today.
Yeah.
But if you go to the pharmacy with a beneficial of SME bank, disappear money, at Soweto, the medicine are there. Anyway, my brother, let me give maybe somebody will come.
What are you mentioning here?
I'm serious. What is happening? Go to Katutu Hospital, there's nothing. There's no medicine.
Yeah.
But if you go to Soweto, those farmers around there, there's medicine out there. You wonder how it's going. My friend, which, sometimes I think we need to change the way we're approaching things.
Yeah. And if people just do their jobs, but not the problem. Yeah. Thanks a lot for coming through, Mandume.
All right.
So, yes, obviously it was a Happy New Year reference there, and obviously, you know, getting back with the discussions that we were at hand with, it did actually expand greatly into a different directions, which are all grounded within the Pan-Africanist discussion. And look, guys, I'll tell you now, our continent is beautiful. I know there's a whole bunch of you Namibians who probably have not, you know, allowed your toe to cross the border to Botswana, to Zambia, to I've never been in Angola, but I've seen Angola from Rundu. You know, you stand in Rundu and you can see Angola on the other side. It looks okay-ish, because I've never been there. And also, Zimbabwe and Zambia, you know, and South Africa. But if you have the opportunity, go and see SADC. Now, obviously, that's a piece of advice as a fellow Namibian who was a tourist. Go and see SADC. Go and see parts of Africa. I'd still like to see Tanzania because I hear they've got the most beautiful beaches. And tourist spots. I mean, it's just out of this world. I'd really like to see Sao Tome and Principe. I'd really like to see some parts where, you know, there were some true, specifically, those historical remnants that found in African history. But before I continue, let me first get the next caller's contribution through. Eagle FM, good morning.
Good morning, Dwight. How are you?
Good on you, Uncle Bona. How are you doing?
No, we thank God, my brother.
How
are things?
I'm all right, Uncle Bona. I'm all right. What do you want to share with us about the Pan-African view?
I think it's important. So especially when you talk about the GDP in South Africa, in terms of trade, in terms of issues of development. So we had South Africa is in two phases. Developed and developing. I don't know whether those countries who are developed are no longer developing.
They are still, Uncle Bona. You'd be surprised. Just go look at the United States. You will be surprised. They are actually still in development phase, or they actually forgot to maintain.
To sustain.
No, to maintain, literally. The weirdest thing is, I know, Uncle Bona, you were still making your point, but there was this rural internet connectivity bill in the American context. It's literally like an investment, a government stimulation piece of legislature. Were under Biden, it was supposed to improve the internet connectivity in the rural areas of the United States and the small towns and rural areas. Angabona,
Yeah.
MTC responds quicker to rolling out a rural internet initiative than what the American government does for its own people. So you'd be surprised, Angabona. They are still developing. They are still. Yeah.
Let's be developing, and many a times I understand for us we have a lot of bottleneck that really hinder us to have access to even funding, even the knowledge that you people are pouring onto us, impacting onto us. These are some of the areas which they are good prospects. But now, in terms of creating some kind of collaborative effort, it's also a big problem. So there was a time I heard people were complaining, no, this one doesn't want to collaborate with us in terms of infrastructure and issues of that nature, but especially this rural connectivity.
Yeah.
It's so important that it should really follow the how they are also developing this the road network. So the internet should be going through. So we are hearing a lot of cybercrime happening, even though they are putting things in place, some frameworks to help us. But I just feel that as we are now developing, there is a lot. There are a lot of also opportunity that we can that are emerging that we can grab also.
Yeah.
So in terms of trading. I really don't know what is really hampering us. Is it the skill gap or what is it that we are perhaps not moving so fast? If we are moving so fast, there's still room for improvement. Where exactly do we need to put much of our effort?
If we have to look at like true development in the purest form, true development is when the Ministry of Urban and Rural Development doesn't have to go around punishing councillors and local authorities for not doing their job, which they are pulling money for, they are earning money for, where they actually go and improve, they gentrify, they allow for development and investment to take place within their local authorities. That is the essence of true development. The essence of development is not seeing Minister Musavi Ashipala meeting the representatives of the Russian trade delegation here. That doesn't speak anything to you and me yet. What speaks directly to you and me is that when I realized at the end of last year, that local authority election, that we are actually supposed to vote for those people first before we vote for a new president. That we need to swap the two elections, Angabona. So 2024 was supposed to happen last year. 2025 was supposed to happen in 2024. So that we know the people that impact our lives daily is the councillor that sits in a municipal council engagement or in a town council engagement. The people that represent a regional council discussion. Because Angabona, the local authorities and the regional authorities were supposed to be, which are the representation of us, you and me. They are supposed to be the guys leading development for Namibia, not your Ministry of Finance, not your Ministry of Urban and Rural Development, not the Ministry of Environment, not the Ministry of Health even. But we are now centralized because those guys realize that the local authorities and the regional authorities don't do their jobs.
Exactly. So, you know what I have discovered? When you look at the composition of our executive and you look at the National Assembly and all those National Council, so the codification of those institutions, I how to really harmonize their work, their cooperation.
Yeah.
So you see that, especially even the ministry that you just mentioned, rural and urban and whatever, those ministries are supposed to be creating employment, you know, opportunity throughout their life.
Yeah.
In existence.
Yeah.
Because housing is a crisis. water and what is it? Rural, what is it? All this electrification.
Yeah.
Rural electrification.
Yeah.
And all these things, actually, they're supposed to be creating job through those municipal, structure.
Yeah.
They're supposed to do those kind of things.
They are the ones supposed to create the jobs, not the Ministry of Labor or the Ministry of Finance. They are, Angabona.
Yeah. So I think we just need to, some of those initiatives that are being talked about, initiated, especially I just wish to see some kind of more group of people, youth, coordinating, working together with the unemployed ones, the graduate and all these other things. And then really engaging in some of those volunteerism that the Prime Minister Morari is talking about. Because that will be now an integration of many, many, many activities.
Mm.
Especially the arts are there. All those other people are there. So can't we really fast track our reform in terms of policies and the programmings and things like that? Because there's a lot of needs.
There is, Angabona, but that's only if the local authorities and councillors are actually listening to us and they actually listen for some words of wisdom, specifically on the realm of understanding their true goal. The game of playing politics, Angabona, should not interrupt our lives.
So much. Oh.
But the game of politics is interrupting our lives.
So much.
Yes. So that.
Yeah, but don't we, because there is a way of recalling them. So I hope people are aware of that. Yes, you can recall them. Those who are representing you. They are not putting your view there. Maybe it's also important that we have some kind of conversation with them before they go there. Once they come, we say, how, what is it that you are having? Then the people in the community should be able to identify their need and interest. And now asking those who are facilitating the development there. But if you are, for us, we are also folding our hands, and the needs are there, obviously, within the community. So we need to bring the council to order, to account, and ask them questions. And we should start having whole conversation with the people like Agagenkop, his life, rest in peace. Yes, he was going around with the whole meetings, the councillors, they can also do them at their schools there within their community. There's a lot of infrastructure that they can hold some meeting and conversation with the people. So,
oh, Sangabona, you're calling for town hall meetings.
Well, how are they going to meet their people? But they can always have the platform within their community there.
Definitely.
So that they can also do that. So, unlike going it through like the late president was doing.
The town hall meetings engagements.
Something like of that nature.
Yeah, yeah. But
thank you very much, Dwight.
Thanks a lot for coming through. Now, on that note, dear listeners, it does bring us up to the end for this morning's engagement, specifically here on the Unpacking the Day. We stayed on the Pan-African and the African trade subject matter, obviously exploring the first of the three hypotheses I actually had. Obviously, the two callers' contributions actually sort of like filled in and also cascaded into other areas. But the third hypothesis, which would have flowed after looking at the aspect how Namibia and specifically the zones of influence around the world specifically also would influence things. The third hypothesis would have been a discussion, obviously, of what can a country like Namibia do with its partners? And my discussion, obviously, with Mandume highlighted in great part that particular role. Some of the points that Angabona also now brought in specifically, like discovering the truest essence of development is actually your local authority picking up its feet and actually doing its job and actually being the change that you are hoping for, being the employer that you are hoping for, being the procurer of local services and goods that you wish to enjoy. But on that note, dear listeners, it does bring us up to the end for this morning's session of the Unpacking the Day. Once again, thanking you specifically, our most valued listeners and also stakeholders, many of you, for the callers' contributions, the engagements, as well as also look forward to much of our social media presence, as we always bring you updates there, as well as also the Village AE paper platform. If you're not a subscriber yet, I don't know where you've been in the past 3 years that we've actually brought about the ePaper platform. It is growing. It is reaching eyeballs and, people who are interested in following the particular content and the particular knowledge that we contain within it. And that specific scenario, also, do remember to also subscribe onto our The Villager email, not email, but the website, because there is a Villager website. Alternatively, if you love following your favorite radio programs, there is the Eagle FM application. It's a free, very small download. It's for both platforms, the Apple and the Android platforms. However, if you are stone cold, purist in terms of following radio to its purest core, remember to always consult the frequency map that we have on our social media platforms. On that note, enjoy the rest of your Friday in our company. I'll be back obviously later on with the home run that with my partner in crimes, that being Helmut. And, yes, we'll be back giving you further insights and discussion on the developments that we've got planned for later today. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of your programming. And that will obviously be with France and Kuta Mosha, right after the break.